Episode 66 of the Millionaire Mindcast. The Ultimate Mastermind Process. Appreciative Inquiry with John Berghoff.
Welcome to the Millionaire Mindcast, where we broadcast weekly interviews with millionaire minds from across the globe to empower you on your journey of unlocking a rich and fulfilling life. It's time to unleash your millionaire within. Now, here's your host, Maddie A.
Welcome into another episode of Millionaire Mindcast, the show that focuses on all things mindset, money, and motivation to help you increase your income, impact, and influence. My name is Maddie A, and today's episode, I come to you as a newly married man, so I'm dropping this most recent Millionaire Worth Modeling episode with some new hardware on the hand, and I couldn't be more excited about it. Today's guest is John Berghoff, and John's one of the smartest guys that I've personally ever interviewed and really come into contact with. I met him about a year ago at Hal Elrod's Best Year Ever Blueprint event in San Diego. He was emceeing the event, and over the past year, he's become an amazing mentor to me. He's probably the most brilliant communicator that I've ever been around, and he's extremely knowledgeable in a mastermind process, actually one of very few experts in this space called appreciative inquiry, which we dive into and cover a lot on in this interview. And you know, anytime I get a chance to chat with John, I always walk away mind blown and with tons of new insight, and this conversation was no different. I've yet to go over an hour before in an interview, but John was dropping so many gems that I just didn't want to cut it short. And honestly, I probably could have gone another hour asking him questions and picking his brain and hearing more about all of the amazing things that he's up to. So I hope you enjoy the wisdom that John shares here. And in addition to what we dive into about the appreciative inquiry process and you getting to understand that a little bit better, he also talks a lot about, you know, power of positivity and how you can become more creative. He talks about some of the things he does to remain present in the moment and increase his awareness and how good questions have impacted the course of his life. We also dove into a cool story about one of his favorite appreciative inquiry mastermind processes. And make sure you listen to the end when he talks about something, really it's an aha, that he's never shared on any podcast or at any speaking engagement, because he just had that moment in time that allowed him to reflect on it. And he felt it was so powerful that he couldn't wait to share it with us, and now he's going to be sharing it every time he speaks. So some really cool, insightful stuff in this interview, and I wanted to highlight that John will be keynoting the One Life Fully Lived conference here in Sacramento on October 22nd and 23rd, and this is the charity that I sit on the board for and serve and give back to, being that I'm so passionate and aligned with their mission. And the West Coast Conference here in SAC, it's got some amazing speakers that focus on helping people dream, plan, and live their best life. Tim Rode, which was a previous episode, is the founder of One Life Fully Lived. And this is one of the cheapest conferences you can attend, being that, you know, one, it's a nonprofit, so they really do a great job of keeping the cost down. But the value that you get from these impactful leaders and speakers, in my opinion, from all the conferences I attend, it's definitely the best bang for your buck. So if you're anywhere near Sacramento or want to come in, I mean, there's people that come from across the world. We would love to have you. I'll be speaking there. John will be one of the keynotes, along with Christopher Lockhead, a previous guest as well on the Millionaire Mindcast. So if you want more info, check out onelifefullylived.org or email me at maddiea@millionairemindcast.com. So with that said, enjoy this episode with John. If you really, really loved it, please share it with someone you think can get some value from it. And let's go ahead and dive into the show. Well, welcome into the show, Mr. John Berghoff. What's up, man?
Hey, Maddie. How you doing, buddy?
Dude, it is a pleasure to have you on the show today. You know, we met, what, about almost a year ago at Hal's event at BYEB.
That's right. You showed up, you volunteered to be on our leadership team.
And that
was when we first met. That was awesome.
Yeah, man.
Well, I'm hoping on this podcast interview, I can recruit you to join us again this year.
Dude, I wouldn't miss it. This has been one of my best years ever. And it all started, honestly, at that event. I really burned the boats and went in this direction of trying to help people create more income, impact, and influence in their life. And really, that started with me. So I owe a lot to you and the BYEB family, man.
That's awesome. Well, tell me how I can help you and your family of listeners today. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, today, I want to, for everybody that's listening in, John Berghoff is an insane mastermind. I'm going to brag on you for a minute. You have been one of those guys. Every year, I feel like I gain a new mentor. I gain someone that just blows my mind, that comes into my world and inspires me to, you know, step my game up. And we've been able to, you know, hang out in Steamboat for a few days, crafting the future of an organization in GoBundance. We've been able to have some amazing masterminds with the Quantum Leap group that you and Hal run. And every time I'm around you, dude, I walk away with so much value. And so that's why I'm excited to have you on the show, because I know our listeners today, all those millionaires in the making that are looking to create, you know, more wealth in all areas of their life, are going to get so much out of this interview. So for the people that don't know who you are, tell us a little bit about John Berghoff, where you started and where you're at today.
Oh, gosh, a great question, a big question. So who am I, right? I'm a dad and a husband. My wife and I have three beautiful children, a six-year-old boy. His name is Ace, by the way. Our five-year-old girl is named Sierra, and we named her Sierra after the Sierra Nevada mountains. My wife and I got married in Yosemite. We actually got married on top of Half Dome. So there's a little nugget about our personal lives. And then our youngest son, Kaizen, is two. And our kids are like the highlight of my life. So when someone asks, who am I? You know, that's the first thing that comes to mind. And I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a scientist. I'm a human behavioral scientist. And the work that we do is aimed at creating significant change around the world, trying to change how people talk with each other at work. So there you go. In a nutshell, that's who I am.
So let me back up for a second, because you started in an organization that was heavy in personal development, and then you went into basically taking in an organization from what was the number, what to what in revenue?
You're probably thinking about Vitamix.
Yep.
I was really privileged to head up sales for the Vitamix organization for a number of years. And when I got there, we had about 175 people on our team. And these are full-time sales professionals and managers. And when I left about 4 years later, we were up to almost 600. So our team grew tremendously in revenue. I think we grew from around 40 to over 170 million in a really short period of time. So that was an incredible learning experience, truly fulfilling, and it gave me an experience that kind of reset the direction of my life, because I realized it helped me to start to realize what I then wanted to do, at least for this next chapter.
And
it was awesome.
And what was that? What was that next chapter looking like for you?
Well, I didn't know when I left Vitamix, but I left because I had this feeling, there was a seed that had been planted inside of me that said, if I can find a way to reverse engineer or capture the essence of what we did here to have this fantastic experience, and if I could start bringing that to other organizations, that would be huge. And I didn't know how I would do that. It took a couple of years to figure it out. But now we have figured out how we want to do it. And so now today, that's what we're doing. We go into organization. And it's not just for-profit private organizations. We're getting called into community groups, to entire cities and regions, to entire industries, to hospitals, education systems, anywhere where there's a system of people that need to figure out how to work together, how to innovate, how to collaborate, and how to co-create their future. We're being called in, and it's been fascinating, Maddie. I get called into the most incredible opportunities. You've been to at least a couple of these to kind of see it unfold.
It's unreal, man. I'll be honest. I've been in a lot of mastermind settings. I've been in a lot of intimate group spaces where, you know, you're really working towards a goal, but I've never been a part of something that has such a tangible formula for creating the change collectively as a group, and to see that process unfold right in front of you and to partake in it, and then to get to the end and look back on what you created, it was mind-boggling. And so what do you tell us, what is this process called? What are you talking about?
I know, we built it up, right? It's like, what are they even talking
the cliffhanger.
About? What are they even talking about? So at the simplest level, and I want to make sure I call attention to, my understanding is your audience, many of whom might be listening to this, are entrepreneurs and maybe solo entrepreneurs, self-employed entrepreneurs. And I just want to tell you right now that even though the work that I do is at the scale of a whole system, so much of what we have learned is really applicable to each of us as individuals, because there's fundamental truths around what we see when 100 or 500 people are in a room creating together that when I step back, I go, wow, that's true for me as an individual too. So I just want to make sure I'm clear on that. So what is it that we do? Well, the simplest explanation is we are engineers, and we go in and we re-engineer and we really reprogram how communities or teams or entire organizations talk with each other. And how do we do that? Well, there's a few really simple pieces to it. The simplest explanation is by teaching people how to ask different questions and how to configure themselves differently. When I say configure, meaning learning how to have a dialogue with not just two people, but 10 or 20 or 100 all at once. And that's tricky, and it does take a process and a method. And we have one that one of our partners created 30 years ago. It's called appreciative inquiry. Appreciative meaning we focus on strengths and we build from our strengths, and inquiry meaning we ask questions, because what we ask about, we study and become. But the fundamental answer, Matt, what we do is we reprogram how people talk to each other. And the simplest explanation is by choosing new questions. And what's amazing is when you choose new questions, so I know your podcast is all about mindset and motivation and money. I can tell you right now that just changing the questions that we ask ourselves can totally accelerate evolving our mindset, evolving how we motivate ourselves, and evolving how we attract more money. So I'm really excited to see where we go with this, but that's the essence, is we bring questions into groups of people so that they can elevate how they connect, how they collaborate, and how they create.
So before we dive into kind of the X's and O's of this process and give people, you know, some of that gold that can come out in the appreciative inquiry process, I'm curious to know a little bit about you and what's your motivation behind doing this?
Yeah, wow, big question, right? I guess there's a couple things that come up for me when you ask what's my motivation. So one of them is personal, and the other is not as personal. Maybe they're all personal. So first of all, Matt, the personal motivation is, and I don't know when this was instilled in me, but I think, you know, I had an experience when I was 17 years old where I was given an entrepreneurial opportunity, and I was really fortunate. I had amazing mentors. And now I'm going to take some credit. I worked my ass off. I worked harder than a lot of people around me. And combining that hard work with having great mentors and being willing to learn, I had an incredible entrepreneurial experience at a young age. And by the way, up until that moment, I was struggling. I barely graduated from high school. I didn't open my backpack my senior year. I was not thriving in my life socially, intellectually, physically, in any way at that time in my life. But I found this opportunity that really changed the course of my life. And I share that because when I say it's personal, you know, I've also had several mentors and friends, best friends and mentors, who have passed away. And I don't know which specific of these experiences, whether it was my first kind of change in the course of my life at a young age, or having people close to me, or maybe it's my connection with the Front Row Foundation. It's a wish organization that our good friend John Vroman started 10 years ago. And to be a part of something where we create magical moments for people who, since this foundation was started, you know, half of them lose their lives shortly after we create a magical moment for them, putting them in the front row of a concert or theater event or sporting event of their dreams, hence the Front Row Foundation. Maybe it's that. But there's something that has caused me at an early age to think about death. And to think about the idea, it's for many people, I think this is what they call a midlife crisis. I guess I just had mine when I was 17. And I think for a lot of people, once they hit about the age 40, which as of today, that's the median age, the median average age, maybe in the world, but in our country. And that's the point where for most people, they start realizing they're now closer to death than they were their birth. And that's why they have this shift in what matters to them. That's why most of us, when we're younger, we care about the things we have. And then when we're older, we care about who we are and how we treat others and these things that have a little bit more of a deeper meaning. Well, I don't know why, but I feel like at an early age, I felt driven to make my life matter because I saw that it can all go away. And so that has caused me at different times to just care less and less about things that I've been glad to care less and less about. So for one, Matt, it's really personal. And then the other answer to what motivates me is the world needs some major solutions. And as an example, we know right now, we know that 7 or 8 out of 10 people who go to work every day don't like going to work. Now, I don't know about all of your listeners, but when I hear that, I think that's one of the great tragedies. That's terrible.
Seriously.
7 to 8 out of 10 people don't like going to work. What entrepreneur, doesn't matter if you're an employee, otherwise, 7, 8 out of 10 people don't like going to work. So I look at that and I go, that's one of the greatest inefficiencies. That's one of the great travesties that needs to be solved. So I'm a little bit on a mission of helping to solve that. And the other, when I say the world needs this, you know, the world needs to find new ways for people to come together, to collaborate, to talk, to unite, to solve problems and to create better futures. And I'm fighting against hundreds of years of conditioning. So as an example, I go into private organizations, big companies, small companies, and I'm fighting against generations of thinking. And when I say that, I'll give you two examples. Matt, do you watch Game of Thrones? Are you a fan of Game of Thrones?
Oh, that's dangerous, man. Yes, I do.
So anyone who's ever watched Game of Thrones, you know, if you watch Game of Thrones and you ask yourself, what are the rules of the game, right? The rules of the game, because every game in life, every society, culture, business, team, industry, there's rules of how to play it, right? You watch Game of Thrones, and the rules of the game are basically protect the king, protect the status quo, change is bad, and watch your back. Now, here's something that's really interesting. If you look at the organizational structure of what's called a feudal monarchy, you've got kings, you've got the serfdom, and you know, you keep the peasants and everybody down, and the king has all the power. What's interesting, Matt, is the modern day explanation of how we organize our businesses by having hierarchy and organizational structure, it was born out of a feudal monarchy, right? And when you look at it, and you ask people, you go, yeah, actually, those rules of the game don't sound too different from me going to work every day. And so I share that because we're up against hundreds of years of conditioning. When we walk into an organization, we're trying to help people understand that your title isn't that big of a deal, that innovation should come from everywhere, that everybody has ideas and voices worth being heard, right? And that's fighting against, you know, there's a lot of managers that are scared when we come in because we're giving the power to all the people. We come in and we say, we don't care who you are. Everyone has ideas and watch. We're going to show you how they can come from everywhere. The other thing that we're fighting against, and this is where this can become really practical for your listeners, Matt, is for generations, we've been conditioned, and some of this is primal, we've been conditioned to focus first on problems, to focus first on what's not working, what's missing, what's broken. So someone could be listening right now, and they could have major challenges in their business or in their lives. They could be upset about their health. They could be upset about their finances. They could be upset about their relationships. Maybe it's all of it or something else. And we've been conditioned to let those things really grab our attention because thousands of years ago they had to keep us alive. But unfortunately, today, if we just keep dwelling on these problems, all that really happens is we become experts on how messed up we are. So when we go in, part of what we do is we help people change the conversations they're having by changing the questions that they're asking And many of the questions that they were asking were unconscious. So we give them some conscious questions to start asking. And one simple example is this. Instead of asking yourself, and if you're listening right now, instead of asking what's broken, what's missing, what's wrong, right? And if you're listening going, well, are you telling me I should just ignore the problems in my life? No, you can't be in denial. But what you can do is as soon as you see you do have a problem, you've got to flip the conversation. What does that mean? One simple example is instead of dwelling on where how maybe your money situation isn't where it is, why not use a new question? Like, what would it look like for me to thrive in this area? What would it look like for me to be exceptional? And if you struggle with that, who are others who are thriving that you want to emulate or model? And then the next question is, what's the first smallest step I can take to move towards that? And then maybe the next question is, what do I need to do to elevate my value so that whatever system I'm a part of, whether it's the industry I'm in, the business I'm in, the company I work for, or whatever problem I'm trying to solve, how do I make myself better at what I do as fast as possible? Because we all know that's what attracts the money, right? So we got to ask different questions, because if we unconsciously keep asking, why me? How bad is this? How difficult is this? We're just going to dwell on things we can't control. We're going to dwell on the past. We're going to dwell on blame. But we got to move quickly towards what are we good at? Where do we want to go? And how do we get there? So I'll stop for a second because I'm passionate about this stuff. But, you know, we come in and we show entire systems, whether it's hundreds or thousands of people, how do you change the questions you're asking so that tomorrow you can change the conversations you're having? But Matt, even one person could learn a lot from this. But I have. It's changed my life to learn to just ask different and better questions.
Yeah, and I've only been through two of these appreciative inquiry processes with you. And just in the short amount of time, I think the first one I did was at Hal Elrod's event that you facilitated in Chicago. And the next was in Steamboat at David Osborne's house for GoBundance. And by moving through that process, not only was it amazing to see the impact it had in the immediate organization, but to each individual to hear their ahas, to hear their takeaways, to see them asking different questions to themselves, that was powerful to me.
Yeah.
And yep. I'm curious now, I loved the whole idea and really the playing field that it levels out for everybody to come with equal value. And it's interesting to see how in business organizations, you know, big and small, whether you have a two-person team or a 200-person organization, how it is generally a top-down mentality. And the big mindset shift that I had in this process was it doesn't matter whether I'm the CEO or whether I'm the janitor, every single person has something of value to bring to the table. So how do you help create that reconditioning platform or reprogramming through the AI process?
So there's a few reasons why the process works that are part of these steps that we take. So for one, when we come in, and again, every one of these, I would really encourage and invite your listeners to ask, how does this apply to me, even if I don't have a team, just individually? So for one, everything that we do is task-focused, right? When I say task-focused, we come into a meeting and we're very clear that, hey, here's what we're working towards. And that task is a positive task. It's not we're coming in here to solve a big problem. It's we're coming in here to move towards something really inspiring, right? And again, it might still be focused on the same task, but we make sure that we frame it in the right way. But I'll give you a really a good example of how do you frame a task so that it really drives a great conversation, whether you have a big group of people like you've seen us do, or it's just you by yourself. British Airways did an appreciative inquiry project where they had a major problem, and their problem was people's bags were getting lost. And in their process of going through this cycle, you know, they started by saying, well, we've got to figure out how to solve all these bags getting lost. And what happened is we stepped in and said, well, wait a minute, look, if that's the task, how do we resolve bags getting lost? What's probably going to happen is you're just going to become experts on why you're losing bags, right? So what we said to them is we said, we understand that's your problem, but could you reframe the task so that it moves you towards something that's so much better than just studying why you're losing bags? And what they eventually came up with is they said, yeah, what we really want to create is an exceptional arrival experience.
Wow.
So that's an example where it still addresses the underlying problem, but now it's going to pull them towards something that's so much better than just, you know, why are we losing all these bags, right? Because what happened is by saying exceptional arrival experience, not only did they figure out how to not lose bags, but they also figured out 10 other things to make the arrival experience amazing. So that's just an example of you start with a good task in the beginning, right? So that's the first thing, and hopefully there's a lesson in there. And then the process that we use, Matt, I won't go through all four steps of the 4D cycle, but I'm just going to focus in on two of them that I think we can all learn from as individuals or leaders of other teams. So the first part of the process we go through is something called discovery. And in discovery, what we do is we bring in a number of questions. In every event, every time, the questions are always customized. They're custom engineered for that particular client or engagement. But the discovery questions are designed to help us get centered around, or sometimes we call it to map out, what we call our core strengths, our core strengths. So what does that mean? So what that means is, if we come together as a community or as a team, or even if you're doing this as an individual right now as you're listening, it's questions like, when are we at our best, right? And we might start by going into the past. What was a moment in time when we were at our very best? What was a moment in time when we were thriving? This is a great question just as an individual, and to pick a moment in time, a story or example. Now, when we do this with teams, we always have them pick a story. Because if we just ask the question, you know, what are the qualities that make us great? That's one thing. If I say, tell me a story about a time when you were great, you telling that story is 10 times, or it's exponentially more real than you just listing out qualities, because that story was your own. It was real. It actually happened, right? Mm-hmm. And then if I say, now that you've told that story, what were the qualities from that story? You know, that's why we use stories. Stories are so powerful. So discovery questions could start by going into the past, where we say, what was a moment in time that was a high point moment where I felt the greatest sense of meaning or fulfillment? What strengths did I bring to the table? What did I do to contribute to this? Or it might be questions around, what did we do collectively as a team or an organization? How did we do this? How did we make this happen? And when we have answers emerge, Matt, what happens is we start to find patterns. We find patterns that, oh, here's what we're good at as an organization or as a person. Hey, if I look at three or four high point moments in my life or my career, wow, here's three or four strengths that I was tapping into. And then we could ask the question, when we are at our best, what are these strengths that come out, right? What are the patterns or themes that we see? And so once we see what our true strengths are, and there's assessments people can take. You can take you can go to the Values in Action Strength Finder. Actually, those are two different ones, maybe. You can go to strengthfinder.com and go take the strengths assessment and find out what your character strengths are. In fact, almost any behavioral assessment tells you what your strengths are, right? So once we know what our strengths are, that's key, because that's what we want to build on and build from, right? If that's where all of our leverage is as individuals and as teams. And then that finally, the second type of question that we'll ask are what we call visioning questions or dream questions, where we move people into the future. And these can be very simple. They can be as simple as, you know, what are your highest wishes for the future? Or if you imagine your life or your business 5 years or 10 years from now, what kinds of images, what two or three images do you see that cause you to most fully, naturally, and quickly come alive? All right. And you play with it like a kid, like you're imagining, like you've got crayons and a piece of paper, and you get from scratch to imagine what could unfold. You see it like a movie, like in your mind's eye. And once an image pops up that really gets you excited, write it down and then talk about it with others. And again, we can take 50, 100, 1,000 people in one room. We did it with 300 people, 400 people just a few days ago for the city of Cleveland.
That's amazing.
Where we had students, we had scientists, we had business leaders, we had the mayor, we had city officials, we had interested citizens. We had people of all walks of life sitting in one room. And in a matter of about 30 minutes, we created one unified shared vision by asking everybody the same question and then finding patterns and themes and drawing those up. And we laid them out. We said, here's our shared vision. That's a powerful thing if you have a team or an organization, but it's also powerful just as an individual to keep asking, what images of the future give me the highest sense of meaning and fulfillment, right? If you imagine yourself 5 years from now, looking back, what types of accomplishments would you feel the most proud of? What types of accomplishments would be more fulfilling than any other? Those types of questions really draw us towards something that can be energizing. In fact, Matt, that's one question I'm going to go back to that we often will start with that's so important for us as individuals is to ask ourselves, why is it that what I am doing matters, right? And ask that on multiple levels. As you're walking from your car into your office or into your coffee shop, wherever you work today, right now, or after this podcast, ask yourself, why is what I'm doing, why does it matter, right? Why does it matter for you? Why does it matter for your organization? Why does it matter for the world? And a couple things, Matt, about the answers. The answers are unimportant. You know, you might be thinking, what? What do you mean the answers are unimportant? You just spent 30 minutes telling us to ask great questions. What do you mean the answers are unimportant? Let me say that a little bit differently. The questions are where everything is important because our questions are fateful. They're like a lens, okay? When we ask a question, that question is like putting on a pair of glasses or a pair of contact lenses where all of a sudden your future changes the moment you ask a new question. And the reason I say the answer doesn't matter that much is because as soon as we ask a new question, your future transforms before the answers arrive because that question is like putting on a lens. And if you imagine, when you put those glasses on at the beginning of the day, have you ever noticed that you stop looking at the lens as soon as you put them on, you look through it. And not only do you stop consciously looking at it, but unconsciously that lens changes how you see the whole world. Our questions are the lens that we put on a moment by moment basis. So the reason I'm de-emphasizing the answers is because if you just ask better questions, wonderful things will happen. And the answers should be evolving and they should be changing, right? We get so caught up, I get frustrated, Matt, when I hear people either teaching or asking about this topic of purpose, as though purpose is like a divine revelation that like you look under a rock, you climb a mountain, you find it, and then you have it. No, purpose is evolving. It's changing. As people, we evolve and we change. So if you're listening to this, you don't know what your life's purpose is, great, because guess what? Even if you did, it's going to change tomorrow and the next day and the next day. So it's more important to just always ask the question, why is what I'm doing, why does it matter? And really, if you refine the answer every single day, that's okay, right? And if you haven't asked this question, there will be a lot of volatility or variety in your answer, right? Because you might go, oh, I haven't thought about it. So you're all over the place. But if you keep asking it, you start to get a little more focused until eventually it gets a lot more focused. But it's okay if it's all over the place and it changes.
So glad you rewinded and asked that question again because you passed over it kind of quickly and then you went back and asked it again. And I literally had so much emotion evoked from that one question just in myself at that moment. Something that got me excited about why I'm doing what I'm doing. So if you're listening in, you should rewind and listen to everything John just said in the last 10 minutes and write down those questions. And sometimes a lot of people say, well, I can't remember. I don't have the awareness to continue to ask myself these questions on a daily basis. And sometimes it's like a muscle, right? You somewhat have to train yourself to become more aware. So if that means writing the questions down and carrying them in your car, maybe that's writing them on your mirror in the morning so you ask them when you wake up. Maybe it's putting them on your desk in the morning so when you walk in, you can engage with those questions. But the power of those questions, the quality of the questions will define and determine most often the quality of the answer. So I love the fact that you highlighted that. And I'm curious, John, you have facilitated some massive summits. What's been one of your favorite AI summits and why?
Oh, wow. I'm pumped to talk about that. I want to I'm scribbling something, Matt. I want to call attention to something that you just said that I think is a big deal, and then I'll come back to this. So a moment ago, you said that when I brought up a question, it gave you positive emotions. I'm paraphrasing. It's essentially what you said, right? Yeah. The reason I want to draw everyone's attention to this is because part of why this method that we use is really powerful is because we now know, or we didn't know this, the world didn't know this 15 years ago, but we now know that when we are in a positive state of mind, that it transforms ourselves biologically so that we can actually think more effectively. In fact, just as an interesting example, there are plenty of studies that have been done. When you're in a negative state of mind, your vision, your field of vision actually narrows to somewhere between 30 and 40 degrees.
Wow.
When you're in a positive state of mind, it expands from somewhere between 30 and 40 degrees to 180 degrees. So biologically, you actually change the part of your brain that's able to think, that's able to connect with other people, that's able to be resourceful, that's able to be creative and find and create new opportunities and innovations, that part of your brain actually turns on when you're in a positive state of mind. So I just want to call everyone's attention to this, that, you know, 5, 10, 15 years ago, if we got on a podcast, well, they didn't have podcasts, but if we got on the radio, right? What's the radio? You got listeners like, what's that? If we got on the radio and said, hey, feeling good is a good idea, most of the world said that sounds bogus. We now know that feeling good is a good idea, not just because you feel good, but because you perform better too. So there's a science, it's an undebatable science. And if you wanna see the evidence and the proof, go check out the work of Barbara Fredrickson or Carol Dweck. They're the leading researchers in the fields of positive psychology. So we know this. I just want to point that out, that these questions cause you to change how you feel in addition to these answers, and all of it works together so that we have a better future. Matt, the other thing I want to draw attention to, and then I do want to come back to your question about favorite summit of all time. I want to draw attention to, you talked about this idea a little bit earlier about if somebody's listening going, hey, this sounds great, how am I going to be present, or how am I going to remember to, you know, ask these questions?
Yeah.
So first of all, it's got to become, for me, I've been doing this for 18 years. It's got to be a habit. You said it, it's building a skill. But I really want everybody to recognize too, that of all the habits and skills to develop, and I'm biased, it's what we do, I think it might be the most important. And I'll share with you something. I was on a coaching call with a client this morning, and he asked me a question. He's a successful entrepreneur, and he said, John, how do I get myself to be more present, right? And if you're the type of person listening to this podcast, you recognize the value of being present. You know that that leads to a lot of productive, positive things, professionally and personally. And so we can all understand the importance of that question. Well, I shared with him an answer that was maybe not what he was expecting. And what I shared with him, and I'll share with everyone now, is that we are all present all the time. Everyone here is present. You might think, no, I'm not, John, I'm texting. Yeah, you're present to that text. That's what you're present to. We're all present all the time. It's just a matter of what are we present to? For many of us, we're unconscious a lot of the time, which means we're present to, you know, our fears about what's about to happen. We're present to replaying stories of what just did happen. We're present to images or thoughts or internal chatter that don't have anything to do with what we're actually physically right in front of, right? So we're all present to something all the time. I share that, Matt, because the argument that I want to make and advocate for is the fastest path to being present to what matters most is to ask better questions. So that's why one of my favorite questions to ask all the time is what matters most right now. And I don't even mean that in terms of like what's my purpose in life, but I mean that like as I walk into my office and I have stuff all over my desk and stuff on my whiteboard, if I ask a question as simple as what matters most, because I see 19 things that could take my attention, as soon as I ask that, I'm a little bit more present and I might make a slightly better decision as to where I put my energy. Another version of that question, Matt, is what matters most in this moment right now? Because as soon as I say in this moment, I'm actually drawing my attention to the present, right? I'm drawing my attention by asking what matters most in this moment, what serves this moment. And sometimes I start to discover, oh, what serves this moment is it has nothing to do with what I'm doing. It has to do with who's around me and what do I do to serve those individuals, right? All derivatives of the same questions of what matters right now. And Matt, the last thing I want to say about this whole idea of being present is I think that the magic and the mystery and the true meaning and the most important answer to our most important question in life is really has everything to do with how present can we be to the magic of the current moment, right? And there's a certain type of wisdom. I think it's called Parajana wisdom, and I think this is a Buddhist saying. I could have that wrong. But there's a certain type of wisdom where when we often talk about meaning or purpose, we are often thinking about how do we prescribe meaning to something that maybe has already happened or something that's going to happen. But Parajana wisdom, Matt, maybe the most important wisdom is when we have the ability to recognize the meaning of something in the moment that it's actually unfolding. When we can find the meaning in the moment that it's unfolding, that is maybe infinitely or exponentially more powerful than how do I assign meaning to the past or what I'm about to do tomorrow, is the meaning in the present moment. And I share that because that's a belief I have. And because I have that belief, I'm always looking for it. And because I'm looking for it, I'm creating it, because that's the good news. It's the bad news and the good news. The bad news is you got to be conscious to do this. The good news is everyone who's listening right now, you get to determine, you can design and dictate the meaning in this present moment, right? So there's five of you listening, probably a lot more than that. But or let's say there's three or four of you. One of you is listening going, well, this is in the background while I'm doing something else. That's fine. It has very little meaning. It's not a moral problem. Another one is listening saying, I'm getting some good ideas. This is cool. Another person is listening saying, I'm choosing to find something from this podcast that is going to change my life. There's another person listening who's saying, I'm choosing to find something that's not only going to change my life, but it's going to change the life of every person I touch. And the truth is, those answers are all true. The truth is, it is our job as leaders to find or create purpose on purpose. And I think the highest purpose is the one that we create in the present moment, right? So Matt, I just wanted to say that because I think it's so important, because I think we all have bought into the need to be present, because we all struggle with it, because maybe, or many of us do, because technology has made it, you know, has a blessing and a curse.
Yeah.
But I just want to point out, you're present to something all the time. And the power of a question is it might be able to bring you present to the most important thing, which is the meaning in the present moment.
That's such a great point.
Do you want me to go back to your question of
I'm just curious, before we move on and wrap up a few questions, did you have any standout summits that you could literally say, wow, the lessons that I learned by facilitating this have changed my life personally?
Yeah. Well, it is so difficult for me to pick one because I can argue that every summit that we do, I walk away with literally what feels like a lifetime of learning. So, which is part of why I feel so privileged to do the work I do, because I am not exaggerating when I say that. That's how it feels. If I had to pick one, that it might not be that there were more learnings from it, but maybe the meaning of it and the magic of what happened was really special. I'll pick one that happened just a couple weeks ago. We're doing like one a week right now. So there's a lot going on, but we did a summit a few weeks ago, Matt, for the Front Row Foundation. And at this summit, we invited 35 supporters, board members, fans, even beneficiaries of the Front Row to come in for a meeting. So just to paint a picture, this originally was just going to be a board meeting of five or six individuals. Remember when I said earlier, we have to fight against generations of thinking as to how things should be done. Even myself, we were going to have a board meeting of five or six people, and it wasn't even my idea. One of our other board members is like, wait a minute, John, don't you walk around the planet teaching people that, you know, we should tap into the wisdom of the whole system? Don't you teach that innovation should come from everywhere? Don't you teach that it's not just the managers that should have the answers, but instead the questions, and we should bring the whole diverse group of the community into the room? I'm like, yeah, you're right. Let's do it. So what was going to be a six-person board meeting turned into a 35-person board meeting, an appreciative inquiry summit kind of board meeting. And what unfolded, and this was, again, just I think 2 weeks ago today, it's amazing how much has happened since then. What unfolded was nothing short of miraculous. And I'll share that story here. So what happened was we got together. The summit started on Sunday evening. And we had a wonderful time Sunday evening. On Sunday evening, we actually drew out from these 35 supporters, we drew out from them what was their shared answer to the question of what are the qualities of a front row moment in life. And using appreciative inquiry, we thought, let's see what these 35, many of these supporters have been fans and supporters of the Front Row Foundation since the beginning, for 10 years. So there's a really rich experience to draw from. And so we drew out from the group, what are the qualities of a front row moment? And these were qualities like transformation, right? When we're evolving, that's a front row moment. These were qualities like community and connection, right? When there's a connection with others or a sense of community, that's a pattern that we found amongst our what we call front row moments in life. When we're engaged and when we're present, that was a quality amongst our kind of front row moments in life. When there's a sense of meaning or purpose or impact, those were qualities of our front row moments in life. Another one that came up was courage. That for many of us, courage was a quality that we shared in these front row moments of life. It either took courage on our part or someone else's to create a front row moment for us. So so that was Sunday evening, and that in and of itself was a truly meaningful experience. But then the magic started to unfold when together we created a front row moment that many of us who were there will never forget. We actually brought these qualities into day two, and none of us saw this coming. So on the morning of the second day, on Monday morning, we did an activity mat where we broke up into groups of about five or six, and each group created visions of the future. It's part of our process. And then they creatively and playfully presented these visions to each other. One of the groups, Hal Elrod, who's not only been the largest single financial supporter of the Front Row Foundation, but the community that he created, the Miracle Morning movement, that community is actually makes up more than half of who was at this meeting. So Hal being a pivotal key person, not only just in the history of the Front Row, but even the magic of the moment that unfolded, a group that he was in along with Scott Lowry, another big fan and supporter. Scott's the CEO of Fathom, a digital marketing agency, and they're also a client of the work that I do. So we all have these different connections. Well, Scott and Hal both presented on behalf of their group. And what they presented was a vision of the future. Now, follow along here, Matt, because this is truly a miracle. They presented at about 10:30 a.m. And what they presented in a nutshell was that the future of fundraising for the Front Row needs to be totally different than anything we've ever done. They presented a dream. They presented this aspirational vision. And we all have to have aspirations that pull us into the future. This is why we can't start by saying what's broken or wrong with our fundraising, because we could have, and that would have been fair. But we've got to ask, what would an amazingly incredible possibility look like? And that's what they were answering, is that question. And when they answered it, they said, we see it totally differently. Instead of traditional fundraising, where we have to just keep asking people for money, or we have to do all these traditional ways of raising funds, what if we thought of it differently and we thought about value exchange? And we thought about how many of us in this group are entrepreneurs? Why can't we find ways of just donating value exchanges where the money goes to the Front Row, but we help each other? And could that not be the way of the future for fundraising? And Matt, here's the long story made short. Those visions were presented at 10:30 a.m. People loved it. We went through the whole day. We finished the day. And then that evening, we were at a backyard celebration at my home. We were sitting on the back deck, sitting around a fire pit, and there were about 20, 25 of us left. And totally organically, spontaneously, naturally, this was not planned, somebody came up to me and said, hey, John, you know, why don't we do that thing that was talked about today? Everyone's sitting on this deck having a great time. What if we found ways to create value and raised money for the Front Row? Now, I, always excited about the possibility of something in the moment. Somebody else fortunately was thinking about the magic that could be in that moment if we just asked that question. I was all over it. So I stood up and I said, I've got a ticket to our best year ever blueprint event, our flagship event. Everyone there comes to it already. They all know it sells out. So I said, buy it for a friend. And so we auctioned it off for a couple thousand bucks right there. And then all of a sudden I said, wait, John Vroman has this dad's retreat that he runs. And so we auctioned off a seat to that for maybe a grand or two right there. So all of a sudden, within a few minutes, we'd raise several thousand dollars just by asking ourselves, what value could we offer and who wants it? Well, Matt, what unfolded over the next 2 hours sitting around that fire pit was nothing short of a miracle. Coming into this event, we needed to raise some money. We didn't really have the time to put together a well-articulated plan, but the dreams that were presented on Monday morning, that night, unfolded in a miraculous way. Because sitting on that deck, one after another, somebody else said, here's what I have to offer, and someone said, I'll bid on that. And we kept going, and we kept getting creative. People started making phone calls. You know, who's got a vacation place? Who do we know who will offer this kind of coaching? Or this person has a graphic design business. Or this person will spend a day and take you to a concert. Whatever we could come up with, we did. And by the end of the night, Matt, we had raised, sitting on that deck, over $75,000. And in total, wow, for that event, in total, we raised $100,000, which was something like four or five times what our original goal was. So,
that's,
you know, people
unreal.
It was totally unreal. And people ask me, Matt, you know, they say, what do you do? And I say, we have a technology, and it's an exponential technology. Really? Yeah, we change how people talk. And when we change how they talk, the results transform, not just incrementally, not just 5 or 10%, which a lot of people would be happy with, but exponentially. And that's what happened. That's what happened. It was amazing. So that was one of the most meaningful summits I've ever been a part of, because it supported the front row, because it was the magic of a community coming together, and because it was driven by a few simple questions that earlier in the day planted the seed, or really the night before, planted the seed of what are the qualities of a front row moment. And those, and there's no such thing as a seed that doesn't eventually harvest. There's no such thing as a dialogue or a conversation that doesn't transform. There's no such thing as a question that doesn't change the future. What can be surprising is how rapidly and how quickly change can actually happen. We just have to be present to ask the questions. We did it on Sunday night. It planted the seeds of what creates a front row moment. We did it Monday morning. It drew images into reality of how we could fundraise. And then we all thought maybe in the next year this will all come to fruition. And it was hours later that it blew our minds. So thank you for asking me to share the story, because I'm delighted to share that one.
And what a powerful story. And for those that don't know John Vroman and the Front Row Foundation, I can say I'm a proud donor. I know you are a massive donor, a big supporter, and obviously facilitating something like that, the impact that you immediately had through that AI is just one example of what you are doing, the value you're adding to the world and to individuals. So what do you fear? Are you scared of anything? Is there anything that keeps you up at night?
Yeah, that's a great question. I feel like when I was on my coaching call this morning, I feel like I actually answered that for the client, although I can't remember the answer at this point. So I should ask myself, what do I fear? Yeah, if there's something I fear, it's probably missing out on the magic in the moment. It's right. If there's something I fear, it's missing out on the mystery and the magic that's available right now to all of us and to myself. And sometimes that just has everything to do with my family and my kids. But what's interesting, Matt, is I feel like I've feared that long enough that it doesn't really sit with me as a fear, because for long enough I've reframed it to how do I find and how do I create that magic in the moment. But I think that's a part of it for me. I think I've had different fears at different times in my life. I think earlier my greatest fear was, what if I don't tap my fullest potential? I don't really worry about that one as much anymore.
Just because you feel like you've really engaged and become more intentional about how you do tap into that?
Well, let's say I feel pretty good about seeing how things have unfolded and the opportunities that have been put in front of it. We're being asked right now to change huge problems in the world, which is great because I have a personal commitment. I have no interest in anything other than the biggest problems I can solve, and they better be global and they better be societally, culturally transformative. So fortunately, we have some major opportunities that have been we've attracted. And I would also say I don't worry about achieving my potential because as I've evolved, I think that next question of how do I connect to the magic in the moment, that is what makes sure that I'm achieving my full potential.
It's awesome, man. Yeah. So we're wrapping up here. What are you doing to focus on your own growth and education on a daily basis?
Yeah. Well, I guess there's two parts to that answer. One part is I'm super intentional and I'm hyper aggressive around what specific skills or competencies do I need to be building? And sometimes it's I need to get more depth in something that I'm already claiming to be strong or competent in. Sometimes it's an ancillary skill or competency that I need to go develop. But I'm often very careful to make sure that I'm not developing some ancillary or secondary skill when instead I should just be hiring or outsourcing that to others. So I usually I'm really focused on, and I could rattle off all the different sciences that I study that make us better at the process right now, but I'm hyper aggressive and I'm super intentional around, like, I flat out don't read books that people recommend, because rarely does somebody write. Now that's not a universal.
So what books are you reading right now?
What am I reading right now? Well, I do a lot of rereading because.
What have you reread recently?
Yeah. So a couple things that I'm rereading and have been rereading. One of them is The Science of Enlightenment. Mm. And The Science of Enlightenment was just published a few weeks ago by Shinzen Young, who
Juliana Reyes.
That's right. That's right.
Guru, yeah.
Shinzen Young is, he created unified mindfulness like 40 or 50 years ago. And what's great is it's kind of like he's an overnight, he's a 50-year overnight success in that really soon everyone's going to realize that most people, whether it's the guy at Google or whoever else has written a lot of books on mindfulness, that while previously, secretly or quietly, he was their teacher, now it's not a secret anymore. So it's kind of nice when someone who is the true thought leader of an entire movement and industry like mindfulness finally gets recognized. But I'm also excited because our good friend Juliana Ray is the exclusive approved trainer of his method. So her world is changing right now. We're actually doing a research study that we commissioned. It's one of the first of its kind in the world where we are studying the effects of mindfulness in the workplace. With all the chatter and talk about mindfulness, there's actually not a lot of great research that's out there. But it's an emerging trend because what people are seeing is that it's really critical. And it has a lot to do with everything we talked about today, being present. It is a fundamental solution in addition to asking questions. So I'm reading his book. I'm rereading Spiritual Capital because there's some frameworks in that book that are key to the work that we do. Conscious Business is a really important book for me that I read and reread and reread. So those are some of the things. And I read a lot of articles, a lot of journal articles in the fields of management and system change, stuff that if I talked about would be boring. But Matt, there's another answer to my question of how do I learn? There's another answer to my question that is super, super important. And I'm excited to share this because this is something that publicly I have never spoken of. And it just struck me the other day. I shared this with my team over lunch that this is something that I have never shared. It has never been explicitly told. And I feel like I've done a huge disservice to all the communities that I've served by them not hearing this story.
Oh, we get so a Millionaire Mindcast exclusive. Let's go.
Yeah, there you go. Dun, 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 dun. You need sound effects, right? So here it is. In addition to lots of input of reading, listening, asking questions, being in environments where I can absorb and ask what I'm learning. It struck me the other day because somebody asked me a question, and the essence of what I was asked was, hey, how did you get really good at facilitating large group transformations? Because they saw that David Cooperrider, generously, who created Appreciative Inquiry 30 years ago, and he's led these approaches with the Navy, the UN, the largest companies in the world, he was generous enough to endorse us as the best in the world. And that's awesome. And someone said, how did you get to be that? And I thought, well, let me think about it. And the first thing that I realized is, well, we're doing a lot of it. Like this year, we've done more AI engagements. And I'm not 100% certain of this, but I've been told than probably anybody else on the planet. And that doesn't mean we're the best at it, but that sure is an interesting signal or just observation to make, is we're doing a lot of it. And what's interesting, Matt, is when you ask me about, you know, what am I doing to learn? And then I think about this conversation I'm sharing with you about how we got to be really good. Let me tell you the story that hasn't been told. So we're doing a lot of this. If you were to ask me, well, John, go back in your life. What were you doing right before this? Well, I was at Vitamix. And if you were to ask the question, you know, describe in a nutshell what happened at Vitamix. Well, while I was at Vitamix, Matt, I personally facilitated hundreds and hundreds of hours of large group meetings because we had a huge sales team. I traveled the world. I went to Japan, Australia, the UK multiple times to train distributors around the world. I personally stood on a stage for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours facilitating large group events. And so it's interesting because you notice there's a pattern, and the pattern is massive repetition. The pattern is massive experience.
Mastery.
And you start to see why it is, and I'm upset that people don't hear this part of the story. Because on one hand, it's kind of bad news. On the other hand, it's good news because there's a simplicity. And Matt, I'm just going to keep going back in time. What was I doing before Vitamix? I ran my own coaching business. Now, I was fortunate that before that I was in sales, so I at least knew how to sell people on hiring me as a coach long before I knew if I was any good as a coach. But because I was able to sell it, I conducted in about a 5-year period of time, I conducted about somewhere between 3 and 4,000 paid private coaching calls. So I'm going to say that again, 3 to 4,000 paid private coaching calls. So you start to see this pattern. Someone asked me, how did you get good at what you're doing today? And I started by going, well, we're doing a lot of it. And then I thought, wait a minute, I was doing a lot of something like this before. And before that, I was doing a lot of something else that where each thing made me better at the next thing. And I'll go back one more time, or maybe two more. So what was I doing before I started the coaching business? I sold Cutco knives. I worked for Cutco, the greatest training ground for any young entrepreneur, period, period, period. And I was fortunate that when I sold knives, I was taught that repetition is the mother of skill, the father of action, the architect of achievement. So what did I do? You know, I sat at the kitchen table of over 1,500 different couples or housewives. 1,500 times I walked into somebody's house and I gave them a pitch. And about 1,100 of those times they bought something. And what did I do to sit at the kitchen table 1,500 times? I made 30 to 50 phone calls. Some days I made 100, some days less. But I made 30 to 50 phone calls 3 to 4 days a week for about 4 years. And by the way, I made all of those calls sitting 3 feet away from my first manager, Dan Cassetta. You want to talk about accountability? Do that. And so I made literally tens of thousands of phone calls. And Matt, I'm going to go back one more time because I want to trace this back to where I learned a lot of this. And it was from, fortunately, seeing my parents work hard every day and seeing my older brothers work hard as they went through life and they went through school. Nothing was ever handed to me. And I was taught, you've got to go earn everything that you want. My first job, I was 12 years old and I had this job for about 5 years. I worked at a golf course, and at that age, they can't pay you. So I did it for free in exchange for free golf. And it wasn't a fancy country club. It was a local public course. And the job that I had was I had to scoop up golf balls off of the driving range. But this wasn't one of those fun carts that you get to drive because the range was too small for one of those. So I had to push a basket that, and the balls would get stuck every 20 feet. And I had to pick up thousands of golf balls every day, most of them by hand. I then had to drive them up to this machine where I'd have to hand clean these golf balls. And I did that for hours. And I cleaned hundreds or thousands and thousands of golf balls by hand. So I share this story with you, Matt, because I feel like it could be too easy to think that I might sound like I've just figured it out or like things came to me easily when a key part of my equation has been hundreds, if not thousands upon thousands of repetitions. And so anyone who's listening, if you want things to come easier, if you want to make a bigger impact, you want life to be easier, get out there and do the thing you're doing and do it so many times that you can't help but get to the point where you're so good at whatever you're doing that the world is giving you much, much bigger problems to solve. I hope you don't mind I took the time to share that, Matt. I just thought it was so important.
It was beautiful, man. I think a lot of people don't realize in order to be the best, you have to do what 99.9% of people aren't willing to do. If you want that extraordinary life, you have to do the extraordinary things on a daily basis. So appreciate you sharing that. And if you were to leave them with one keynote, all those people marching towards the millionaire milestone, creating more wealth in their life, what's that one thing you want to leave them with?
Wow. I'm going to give you three things. One of them is keep listening to the Millionaire Mindcast podcast. That's one.
I like it. We'll stop there.
Yeah. There you go. That's it. So keep, and kidding aside, you know, really what that leads to is my second point, which is to stay curious. So I'm really a big believer in this idea that if we can learn how to cultivate an insatiable curiosity, and you notice the essence of everything we talked about today was the how-to, right? And what is it that we really taught you how to do? How to cultivate an insatiable curiosity by continuing to ask more questions, better questions, right? So have an insatiable curiosity. And the only other thing I'd add to that, Matt, is just to remind people that that on their path to achievement, that the most important goal is fulfillment. That on their path to achievement, the most important goal is fulfillment. So find joy, find happiness, whatever that means to each of you individually. Find meaning, find relationships, find ways to make sure you're using your strengths. Find ways to find meaning and fulfillment in the moment, because that's all that really matters at the end of the day.
Johnny B, it's been a pleasure having you on the show, man. Sharing your wisdom, your ups, your downs, everything in between. It has not only made a significant impact on me, I know it is going to change all the people that are listening to this episode's life, all the people you continue to facilitate summits with. Everything you do on a daily basis is making this world a better place. And just in the short year that I've known you, you've impacted me on many different levels. I'm excited to continue the friendship, and I just want to commend you on everything you're doing. So for those people that want to know more about John Berghoff, follow what you're up to, maybe attend something that you are facilitating, how can they get a hold of you? How can they follow and learn more about that?
Yeah, well, depending on when this episode goes out, I'm hoping we still have seats for your audience. But our Best Year Ever event, bestyeareverlive.com, and I don't just say that as like a marketing ploy, but we sell it out every year. We sold it out 6 weeks early last year, and more than half the seats are gone right now. So if you go to bestyeareverlive.com, please join us in San Diego for 3 days. Sign up for the Entrepreneur Day and come with a friend. You split the ticket that way. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, December 9, 10, 11, I think it is. And I design and facilitate that whole event. I bring in some of the most creative and very best contributors to that event. It is highly experiential. It's transformative. If you've listened and you've enjoyed this whatever hour, it's 3 days of an amazing experience. So bestyeareverlive.com. Matt, I'd love to encourage folks to check out the Front Row Foundation and go listen to our good friend John Vroman with his Front Row Factor podcast, because if you want to learn how to live life in the front row, there's nobody better than him to teach. And of course, here I go, like I'm just going to rattle off, right? So of course, make sure that you check out the Miracle Morning and what Hal Elrod is doing with that community, because so many of, most of who is coming to that Best Year Ever Live group originally came from that particular community. And if you want to find me personally, be my friend on Facebook, follow Flourishing Leadership Institute on Facebook, and go to lead2flourish.com. You know, we've never actually publicly told anybody that we even have a website. So now that people start showing up, we should go make sure it all works. So lead and then the number two and then flourish.com. And Matt, I'll give you a link you can put out with this episode. We have a free webinar that we're going to host in the next couple weeks on leading change. That we offered to folks who were at a summit we were at last week. So I'll see if I can get you a link for that.
Yeah, we'll be sure to
find me. Yeah,
we'll be sure to share and post all the links to everything you just mentioned, to Roman's podcast and to his amazing community and the charity. I will definitely be a Best Year Ever again, so I'm excited for that. We'll have all that on millionairemindcast.com and linked in the show notes. And you got something else you want to add?
Yeah, of course, because you haven't found a way to hang up on me yet. Of course, I'd encourage anybody to go visit the GoBundance event coming up in Whistler. I will be facilitating that event. It will actually be a appreciative inquiry summit where the GoBundance tribe is not only going to be enjoying 3 or 4 days in one of the most amazing places in the world, learning with and from each other, but they're actually going to co-create their future together. So put a link up for that. Definitely invite everyone to come check out the GoBundance event in January. And I will be at the One Life Fully Lived event in Sacramento coming up this next month. So that might be close to some of your listeners. Come visit, come hang out.
The man, the myth, the legend, John Berghoff. Thanks again, brother.
See you, Maddie. Bye.
Cheers. Well, that does it for this week's episode. Thanks again for tuning in. Just wanted to take a quick moment before we wrap up and remind you that we just launched Millionaire Notes. We've had such an overwhelming amount of people sign up. It's been really, really awesome, and I want to make sure that others that still want to gain access to my private note collection that basically houses all the best ideas, inspiration, and wisdom I've extracted that month from meetings I have with other entrepreneurs and mentors, guests that I interview on the show, off air, the conferences that I pay thousands of dollars to attend, all the adventures that I pay thousands of dollars to go on. Basically, anything I encounter in my life during that month, I'm taking detailed notes on it, and you will get access to the gold that I've mined through that entire month. And, you know, I believe it's important to document these moments in life so one can go back to them as needed, learn from them, and implement them, and ultimately continue leveling up to unlock a more rich
and fulfilling life. And so that's why I started taking these notes, and that's why I want to make them available to you. So you don't have to pay thousands of dollars like I do. For just $5 a month, the price of your favorite latte, you will get these delivered to your inbox. And if you want to get those today, all you have to do is text Millionaire Notes, all one word, to 44222. And by doing that, you will be notified that you want access. You'll get sent a link where you can pay the $5 and you'll get those immediately. So we'll confirm with you that you've been added to the list, and moving forward, you'll be getting those each and every month on the first of the month of the best information that I can find out there, handcrafted and curated just for you. So text Millionaire Notes to 44222, all one word, or jump on the website millionairemindcast.com to get more info. Have an awesome day.